Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
87 months in prison, a sentence for George Santos. Remember there was a time, Joe, in Washington where George Santos was like the most scandalous thing we could possibly be talking about, captured all the attention in the headlines. It feels like we have a story like that now at least once a day, if not a
That seems a bit quaint at this point. Reporters running through hallways trying to get him on the record, doors being slammed. He was speaking pretty existentially from the heart, I guess, to the New York Times, talking about how he came into this world alone and he will deal with this alone.
Yep.
87 months. That's a pretty remarkable sentence for the former congressman from New York.
Yeah, and of course, we talk a lot less about George Santos these days, not just because he's no longer a member of the House of Representatives, but because other issues have caught the attention of Washington and the world, predominantly, of course, focused on issues like trade, as well as geopolitical conflict. And the president, who likes to see himself as deal maker in chief, trying to make deals on all of these different fronts with trading partners, but also with adversaries and allies when it comes to ending the war in Ukraine, for example. And he touched on both when speaking to reporters before his departure for Rome earlier today.
I'm getting along very well with Japan. We're very close to a deal. Meeting with Putin right now as we speak, and we have a lot of things going on. And I think in the end, we're going to end up with a lot of good deals, including tariff deals and trade deals.
This is where we start with Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall, who is at the White House right now as the president and first lady make their way to Rome. She's on the North Lawn with the latest. Tyler?
Yeah, hey, Joe. Well, one of the themes that we are tracking here, of course, the trade talks. You heard President Trump there say that there has been good progress with Japan. And he also has been talking about how he has been speaking with China's President Xi Jinping. Kaylee mentioned at the top there the Time magazine interview, which was released today, but actually conducted on Tuesday, where he said that he was called by the Chinese president. Now, however, he didn't give us many details, didn't give us a timeline or what was discussed. And reporters tried to pin him down on it when he was heading out towards Marine One, asking if this call had taken place since his tariff announcement. And take a listen to what he had to say here when he was asked.
You said you spoke with President Xi. Have you spoken to him since the tariff? When did you last speak?
I don't want to comment on that, but I've spoken to him many times. Yeah, I'll let you know at the appropriate time. Let's see if we can make a deal.
Well, when it comes to a deal, President Trump has reiterated that he thinks that 145% levy on Chinese goods is very high, amounts to a trade embargo, which has prompted some optimism that that rate could come down. In that Time magazine interview, he did say that he knew what the rate was that Beijing would be comfortable with, and has previously floated that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we could actually see a revised rate. It does come on the heels of some Bloomberg News reporting earlier today that China is potentially getting ready to exempt some U.S. goods from tariffs. This includes particular sectors where Beijing is more import reliant, such as medical equipment or industrial chemicals that are used to make things like plastics or cooling agents. Our reporting also indicates that potentially plane leases could be exempt from tariffs too. So sort of a wide range here as Beijing tries to shore up its own support for its economy amid what has become a tit for tat trade war. But Joe and Kaylee, sources familiar do caution Bloomberg News that everything is still very much in flux as we try to piece together where trade talks are really headed.
Well, and that goes not just for China, but trade negotiations with our dozens of trading partners as we're still looking for any deal to emerge. Tyler, do we have a sense as to whether or not, even just within the time frame the president has allotted himself for this trip to Rome, that any conversations with European leaders, for example, on trade will be happening?
Well, he was asked directly that, Kaylee, whether or not he would be taking meetings. He did say he was, but of course, it's a very short timeline here. It really remains to be seen if there will be any sort of pull asides when it comes to this. There are, of course, those countries that we know that have been getting priority when it does come to these talks, with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent in the Oval Office yesterday saying that South Korea, the timeline for a potential trade deal with them is actually faster than he intended. He said that we could see an agreement of understanding, as he called it, with the technical details worked out as soon soon as next week. That sort of falls in line with some rhetoric that we've heard for other trading partners that have been prioritized, including Japan and also importantly India, after Vice President J.D. Vance visited the country over the weekend. We had a readout from the USTR saying that they had finalized a roadmap towards an agreement. That's sort of what we have been hearing from this administration, that we're going to start to see these frameworks rolled out as this White House really tries to show that they are making progress on these deals.
All right, with the 100-day mark looming next week, Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall live at the White House for us here on Bloomberg TV and radio. Thank you so much. And it does sound, Joe, that for all of the optimism that markets seem to have found, or at the very least the sigh of relief they seem to be breathing this week, that so far we haven't gotten much more material than maybe a softening of rhetoric on the margins and also agreements to eventually agree to something, but not actually those final inked deals.
Far from. This kind of goes back to Tuesday. We're still trading off of the de-escalate remark in away from Scott Bessent, which was behind closed doors. And I know that the president has suggested maybe a drive to be more kind in negotiations with China. But it is interesting to see a bid under the market here with very little fact to base it on. Maybe there's some bottom feeding going on. We'll know more about this after it happens.
Yeah, well, and we'll hopefully know more about it after speaking to Christopher Smart about it. He's with us here in our Washington, D.C. studio, managing partner at Arbroath Group and former special assistant to the president in international economics during the Obama administration, here with us on Balance of Power. Good to see you. Thank
Great
you for coming
you.
In.
Nice
I wonder, to see you. As you consider the kind of tone shift we have seen this week, or sentiment shift at the very least, if you think there's enough materially, fundamentally, that has changed here to back that up.
Well, I think the bouncing in the market that we've seen is a reflection of just how much investors, I think, are grasping at any sign of slightly more certainty where we're headed, whether it's on tariffs, whether it's on negotiations. You know, if the fact, as you were pointing out, Joe, that an announcement of an intention to make an agreement about a memorandum of understanding moves the market, that's how bad things are. I wasn't actually in this meeting when Secretary Bessent talked about de-escalation, talked about the need for one side to climb down. I think he didn't assume that it was going to be the United States climbing down, but I think investors mostly expect that if we're going to have some agreement this quickly, these are trade agreements that are very complicated and take months and years to really negotiate and hammer out. But if we're going to come down, if we're going to strike a deal very quickly, it means it's going to be something of less substance.
Wow. Well, that's really interesting, because the president said, you know, with the idea of a trade deal, as Bessent himself suggested, could take 2 or 3 years. The president said we could have new rates, new tariff rates for China in 2 to 3 weeks. Is that the U.S. climbing down? And does that make you feel more hopeful?
Well, I don't want to contradict the president, but it does seem hard to believe that that's what we're going to be doing.
Okay.
The confusion in the market right now is nobody expects that 145% tariffs can be permanent. And I think we're hearing that, and that was reassuring to people, because it's just not sustainable. It is an embargo, effectively, as Secretary Bessent said. But the real question is, will we have more certainty on the other side of things? And, you know, there is a world in which you look through the fall and there's a budget deal and the debt limit is behind us, and we have half a dozen of these framework agreements in place. And so you know what kind of range we're dealing with, and that's a much better world. But the question is that the new steady state, or do new things get put on the table?
Well, and as you suggest, this idea that no one thinks we're going to stay at 145% forever, I wonder how much can change, though, even if that no longer remains the rate, in terms of our fundamental relationship with China, knowing already there was an effort to diversify supply chains away from China because of the scars of the pandemic. You have news today, Apple is going to look for all of the iPhones it sells in the U.S. to be made in India by the end of next year. Changes are already underway. Can we ever really revert back to any kind of at least what was the norm?
No, I think the old norms have been broken, and I think we are moving into a new kind of arrangement. What that really looks like in the end is hard to predict, but I think it is, you know, a decoupling of sorts. We used to tell companies that you need a China plus one strategy, so you should build a factory in China and then one outside of China. I think companies are now looking at a U.S. plus one strategy, where they have to, you know, the India deal, the India announcement at Apple is to bring product into the U.S. from India rather than from China.
Well, this is all happening with financial ministers and leaders from around the world coming to Washington for the spring meetings of IMF, World Bank. This is a peculiar moment for all of this to be unfolding. We're talking about what Scott Bessent said behind closed doors this week. There are a lot of conversations happening behind closed doors. And I wonder what you can share with us. What are you hearing that didn't get into the front page or onto the Bloomberg terminal? When it comes to concern, when it comes to uncertainty, what is the general feeling with world leaders this week?
Well, I think the measure of how grim things are is that the session that I was in on the Middle East is the most optimistic. Wow. That we might have an Iran deal, and that could really go a long way to...
Imagine saying that 3 months ago.
But it gives you a sense of the uncertainty about everything else, whether it's Russia or China or U.S. policy, or indeed a lot of our foreign friends are really looking at what's happening in the court system, what's happening in the regulatory system. Lots of questions about the Fed until the president backed off on that. And a real sense of, is the United States the same business model that we've all come to love and invest in over the last several decades? Those things don't change overnight. It takes years for things to change dramatically. But the things that made the U.S. so consistently innovative, dynamic, and able to grow so quickly people are questioning.
I'm glad you raised the Fed, too, because as we consider what changed this week, we did start the week not knowing if the president intended to fire the Fed chair, and then he said he had no intention, never had any intention of that. So maybe clarity on that issue, at least for now, Christopher. But he still maintains, even if he's not going to try to oust Powell, that he thinks Powell needs to move now, that he risks being too late. And I wonder, with the economic picture you are seeing, if you think there might actually be some merit in that argument, that monetary policy simply isn't going to be able to react quickly enough to whatever it is we're heading into.
Well, I think my view, and I think the view of a lot of investors that I talk to, is that the best thing you can do right now is to sit tight. You probably want to, you certainly don't want to think about raising rates right now. But you want to know where the steady state is going to settle. I mean, if you could sort of start knowing where tariffs will be and start modeling that and sort of thinking through where that will feed through to either inflation or slowing growth, that's one thing to do. But you don't know where that's going to settle. And the president isn't helping things, unfortunately.
Would it do damage to the Fed's image if we did get a cut right now?
I think it would.
What if Jay Powell said, okay, 25 basis points, stop calling? What would be the market reaction?
I think it would probably be positive for a day and a half, but overall
and
negative.
And then who do you trust?
I think it starts to undermine the Fed's credibility because, we've had the Fed, it's been remarkable through all of our political discord. I don't think anybody credibly attacks the Fed for being politically motivated one way or the other over the last several years. The unfortunate thing right now is whoever is nominated to replace Jay Powell next year is going to come with a sort of a shadow of suspicion of what kind of a deal did they strike to get the job.
If not a shadow chair, which we've talked about before.
Indeed.
That's certainly an idea that has been floated at this table by the now Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, actually, of all people. To this notion of credibility, though, it's one thing to consider the Fed's credibility. It's another thing to consider just the credibility of the United States. We have a new story out on the terminal today looking at the dollar. Could be the worst first 100 days the dollar has seen since the Nixon administration. We all have been paying attention to what's been happening in the bond market. And we haven't even really started the debt ceiling fight yet, Christopher, which we have to look forward to in the next few months. Do you see a serious risk of an undermining of the creditworthiness of the United States or the view of creditworthiness of full faith and credit?
Well, as you know, creditworthiness is incremental and it goes, there are shades of gray. I don't think things are about to fall apart. I think the dollar is still the world's reserve currency for a long time, given the lack of alternatives. But we clearly haven't done ourselves any good. And it is one of those things on the margin where I think investors start looking at the U.S. business model. They go back, portfolio managers are going back to meet with their investment committees over the next few months, and they're going to say, what's our exposure to the U.S.? 60%, 70%? Let's just take that down 5 or 10 for now. It's going to be a brave portfolio manager who goes to his credit committee and says, let's just double down on the U.S. because we think they've got something good going on right now.
I wonder your thoughts in our remaining couple of minutes here on a series of unilateral deals emerging here. We're talking frameworks. Let's say they do emerge as deals. This seems to be a best case scenario for Wall Street right now, but it's a pretty darn confusing mess to consider how this White House could negotiate them all simultaneously and how they would all potentially argue with each other in the end. Do you worry about that patchwork being the final product here?
I think it's a big worry right now. I guess the glib answer to your question is maybe AI will help them negotiate all of these deals at once.
Maybe.
But I think it is. I mean, actually, that's probably the encouraging outcome, because as long as you don't have a single principle you have to apply to all of your negotiating partners, you can cut separate deals, and then investors can understand what the rules will be. But it is certainly a different framework, and it's not the more integrated, freer flowing goods and financial flows.
That's a rewriting of supply chains.
That's a rewriting of supply chains, and it's a shifting of the system and the rules we've been used to since the end of the Cold War.
Mm. Wow, remarkable. Christopher Smart on IMF Week with us here in Washington. It's a treat to have you with us.
It's great to be with you.
Here at the desk. I hope we can do this again sometime.
Thanks
very
much.
Bring this behind the scenes in some pretty interesting conversations, including the one we just had here on Balance of Power. I'm Joe Matthew alongside Kaylee Lyons in Washington. We're just getting started. We have to assemble our panel next. Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano are with us on another busy day in Washington with their eyes on Rome. 4 a.m. for the papal funeral tomorrow, and the president looks like he's coming straight back.
Yes, indeed. That is what's on the schedule. Of course, it'll be 4 a.m. for us. It will be later
That's
in Rome,
correct,
a more
yes.
appropriate time of the morning, but still only, I think, 8 hours after the president is scheduled to land in Europe. So it is a tight turnaround indeed. We'll have more ahead here on Bloomberg TV and radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Fourth up day in a row could actually turn out to be a pretty good week for risk assets, even in the face of still a lot of questions remaining on the fate of U.S. trade policy and of trade negotiations. We've heard from President Trump a few times about this today, including as, of course, he boarded or was heading to Rome. He just spoke with reporters on Air Force One, once again saying that countries have been unfair to the U.S. when it comes to trade. But he also spent a good deal of time talking with Time magazine about his trade policy, suggesting in this interview, which took place a few days ago on April 22nd, that there's been some 200 trade deals that he's done, though none have been announced. But he suggests this whole thing could be wrapped up in 3 to 4 weeks.
It's a lot of countries.
It is a lot.
He also said that China's President Xi Jinping has called him.
Yes.
And that his administration is in active talks with Chinese to strike a deal. And we've talked about this. He was asked about this a couple times this week. Lutnick and other senior administration officials, referring to the Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, confirmed the talks, which Beijing disputes.
Yes.
So we're still not actually sure if they're on the phone, Kaylee.
Yeah, we heard the president once again this morning saying he's talked to Xi multiple times, but he wouldn't say when, wouldn't say if it was since the implementation of these tariffs. We do know they did speak a few days ahead of his inauguration back in January, but there has been no confirmation of a phone call since then.
We'll play this to the panel and get their thoughts on this, because we are at an interesting moment here with the president airborne on his way to Rome, lawmakers still at home, and our chance to talk about some important issues with our panel. Rick Davis is here, Republican strategist and partner at Stone Court Capital, alongside our Democratic strategist, Jeannie Shanzano, political science professor at Iona University. It's great to see you both here. Jeannie, I've been asking since Donald Trump said on the Oval Office that they, quote unquote, were meeting, and he wasn't going to suggest or reveal, he said, who they were or was. Does it matter at what level these talks are happening?
Well, it sure does. You know, I mean, it's not a great day for the United States when we have to have our president corrected by the Chinese foreign ministry, saying, you know, don't exaggerate, tell the truth, be clear. And that's essentially what we're getting. I mean, you just mentioned the 200 deals. We don't know how that could be with less than that many countries in the world, but apparently he's talking about something else. So, you know, this is typical Donald Trump. He's excited about his first 100 days, overstating numbers. And the fact is, people are really dependent for their lives on the truth of many of these things. And so these overstatements become sort of silly in a way, but also problematic in a serious way.
Well, and Rick, when we consider that China is openly contesting the suggestions by President Trump that negotiations are happening, putting it out there for the world to see, does that do anything to undermine the president's credibility, knowing that we often sometimes approach with skepticism certain characterizations he makes or statements that he makes?
Yeah, look, I mean, we've learned for a long time that you have to take everything that Donald Trump tells you with a grain of salt, right? He even admits to hyperbole on virtually every issue that he ever comes out of his mouth. So it's pretty dark days when you have to rely on China, known for its propaganda and use of distraction as a foreign policy tool, to get the straight dope. I don't trust either one of them. I mean, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. And I think in this case, to, you know, try to follow the spin, you know, I mean, we went from 90 deals in 90 days to 125 countries have tariffs on them to 200 deals are going to be announced. I mean, I just want to know who's negotiating with the penguins on Heard Island, because that's what I'm watching for real success.
That's true. They're still facing pretty high tariffs. He got into national security and geopolitics in this interview. They talked for about an hour. And again, Kaylee mentions this took place on April 22nd. Jeannie talked about Ukraine and blamed Kyiv for starting the war. Quote, "I think what caused the war to start was when they started talking about joining NATO," unquote. The negotiated peace he is pursuing would, of course, give Vladimir Putin some 20% of Ukrainian territory. As Time magazine points out, the president said, quote, "Crimea will stay with Russia," unquote. What do you make of these comments to a publication in the throes of peace talks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad moment for the United States and for democracy around the world that we have now a president in office. I give him credit, by the way, for trying to negotiate a deal. But not just that he's talking about it, but that he is blaming a sovereign country having been invaded. And you look at those horrific pictures from the last 72 hours of the absolute violence that Russia has, you know, over the air and on the ground in Kyiv, on, you know, in the heart of Europe. And to have an American president, the leading democracy in the world, say Crimea is gone, and to blame the victim is just utterly appalling. But it's in keeping with so much in this conversation that is stunning. I mean, they ask him at one point about a quote from John Adams. Does he believe we are a government of laws and not of men? And he says, no, I wouldn't agree to that 100%. And he goes on to talk about why that is. You know, this is the president we're dealing with, and he's hiding behind the fact that he ran on these things. But he is also, if you look at the polls, losing support on a lot of what he is pursuing here.
Well, and when we consider the geopolitical part of this interview, Rick, when he was talking about a deal with Ukraine, the journalist questioned him on his repeated insistence on the campaign trail that he could end the war in a day. And he suggested in his answer that he was just exaggerating, that no one should have expected him to end the war in the day to get back to kind of what we were discussing about his rhetoric here. But is that also an admission that this particular negotiation with Steve Witkoff, dispatched again to the Kremlin today to meet with Putin, is much harder than he thought walking in?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Donald Trump, whether you think it's a superpower or a significant problem, simplifies every complicated world problem into the basic elements that he wants to talk about. And so from his perspective, why in the world would anybody want to continue killing each other with no apparent success on either side? So in his mind, you know, offer a deal that stops the killing, which he must have repeated 1,000 times on the campaign trail, and everyone's going to take that deal. It is a surprise to him, I have no doubt, that there are more intransigent issues than life and death on the front lines of Ukraine and Russia at work here. I think he's found the same thing. We've kind of quit talking about it, but same thing applies to peace in Gaza. He's made many statements along the campaign trail and since president, how he was going to wrap that up in no time. Nobody's going to oppose his will. And it's only gotten worse there. He told Putin to stop attacks yesterday. And overnight, we had more suicide drone attacks launched from Russia onto Ukraine. I mean, he needs to start to be concerned that by making these declarations to ordering heads of state around the world around, that somehow he's going to start losing credibility if they ignore him. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a concern for the prestige of the United States, our power abroad, and how foreign leaders will approach us in the future when we really do need to solve intractable problems.
Well, yeah. Rick mentions Gaza, Jeannie. The president told Time magazine, Saudi Arabia will go into the Abraham Accords. That will happen. He went on to say something really interesting. "Last time I was fighting for survival," he said. "This time I'm fighting for the world." This is a man with a different motivation than in the first term, isn't it? A different purpose.
Yeah, you know, I think actually his purpose is the same. I mean, this is somebody who believes in executive power. He is somebody who believes that he should have more of it constitutionally. And if not, he's going to do everything he can to take it. What I think has changed in this Donald Trump 2.0 is the people around him and the fact that they had 4 years to make these plans. You know, we're going to use a...
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
I think it's going to get harder as we go on. And if I could say, I think one thing he gets credit for, which Democrats should learn from, is announcing he's going to talk to Jeffrey Goldberg from The Atlantic yesterday. You know, this is somebody who famously will talk to anybody at any time. He's got to come right over to Bloomberg and talk to you guys. And that is one thing Democrats should learn from. Talk to everybody, because he says, you know, I'll just try to change their mind. They're going to write about me. I'll go into the lion's den. And Democrats have to learn from that. It's one mark of what a good politician he is. But I don't think he's proven to be as good of a policymaker or a governor.
Rick, we have less than a minute left here. But when asked about the expansion of executive power, the president repeatedly suggested in this interview, he's just doing what he was elected to do. Is he necessarily wrong on that?
Yeah, I think his point that he's just making good on these campaign promises is not wrong. He talked about most of the things that he's doing. And at the time, we kept saying, wow, what a crazy idea that is.
And yet here we are, Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano, our political panel, joining us throughout all of it as we approach the 100-day mark. And of course, on this Friday, thank you for joining us here on Balance of Power. And we'll dig more into the war in Ukraine and the efforts to end it next, right here on Bloomberg TV and radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, "Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
With headlines coming from Air Force One, President Trump is on his way to Rome right now for the papal funeral tomorrow and just crossing the terminal with tariffs in mind. We've talked a lot this hour about tariffs and China. Kaylee, the president says he won't drop China tariffs unless they give us something, is the quote. Opening up China would be a big win, he says. Markets are adjusting to tariffs. So we're going to be talking with Mara Rudman about the standoff with China and other trading partners when it comes to tariffs, the impact on the economy and the markets. But it does seem like Wall Street is feeling a lot better about things today than they were on Monday.
Well, and certainly Romain Bostic knows that well, co-host of Bloomberg The Close, who happens to be here in Washington today and is joining us now in studio. Romain, when the president says markets are adjusting to tariffs, is it an adjustment we have seen this week? Is that how you would characterize it?
I'm not sure they're adjusting to tariffs, but they are adjusting to the messaging. And I mean, you talk about how this week has kind of been bookended, right? I mean, you had some relatively reassuring comments out of Scott Bessent down here in the IMF, IIF meetings. That seemed to actually soothe the market, the idea that maybe there is going to be a little bit more of a slow walk on some of this stuff and more accommodation for Wall Street and their concerns, for corporate America and their concerns. But then, of course, as you get towards the end of the week, you start to get additional comments like this. What is the relationship with China right now? What are negotiations like? You know, you get these comments from China basically saying, hey, we're not going to do anything until you show us more respect. So if you're a trader or even a long-term investor, do you adjust right now?
Right. Well, that's the question, I suppose. I can't believe we got you to come back down here, wait into the swamp, by the way. This is a moment.
It's going to be consequential.
This is a moment.
And, you know, I hear Congress is back next week, too.
That's true.
And
that's
going to be big.
You're
going to
get out of here just in time.
That's supposed to be the good part for the market, as you and Kaylee know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The budget, the tax cuts.
Think about that, though. What you just said, the connection, the influence that Washington is having on Wall Street, it's not isolated to the tariff conversation. We're going to get actually into deeper waters with reconciliation and the debt ceiling.
Yeah.
What's the market? Do we then retrace our lows and freak out all over again?
So I spoke with the analysts yesterday. So right now they're kind of looking towards late May, saying that, look, if we get to Memorial Day and we start to either see a deal in Congress or at least enough progress towards a deal, that could be a big upside catalyst for the market.
Yeah.
Conversely, if we don't see evidence of that, he's saying that that could be the pillar, because you have a market right now long term that is betting that all of the short term pain that we've seen over the last few months, that that can maybe be remedied if we do get more pro-growth, pro-business, tax-friendly policies out of the White House and Congress over the next few months.
The question I continually have about that, though, is if largely most of this policy is going to be an extension of existing policy, where is that stimulus supposed to kick in, Romy?
I'm not sure, and I'm not sure there is economic stimulus, but if you pay attention to earnings, a lot of these companies have found ways to navigate so far, not necessarily on top-line revenue growth. If you look at analyst estimates, revenue growth for the S&P as a whole is basically going to be flat. But you are seeing strength on the bottom line. So a lot of cost cutting, productivity improvements, things like that. That might be the saving grace for corporate America, which then becomes a saving grace potentially for the markets. And maybe that feeds into the broader economy.
It's been watching gold sync up a little bit with Bitcoin recently. When we talk to you, we tend to hit on these after the bell. I want you to share with our viewers and listeners. This is going to seem rote for you, but share with our viewers and listeners how you scope the market. What are the six things that you look at to find out the state that the market is in right now?
Well, obviously, everything going on in FX, so pay attention to the dollar, particularly the correlations with the Canadian, the Mexican, as well as the European currencies, particularly the Swiss franc. The other thing is the swaps market. It gets a little esoteric, but these are basically the traders who are out there determining where they think the next rate cuts will be, where they think the next the puck is going on the economy. They've been out ahead of this a lot. They've been right both to the upside and the downside over the last few months in a lot of these situations. So those are probably the two primary areas. The other thing, and I really stress this a lot, is pay attention to what these CEOs say over the next few couple of weeks in corporate America. 180 companies reporting next week, and it's the biggies, you know, the Amazons, Microsofts, GMs of the world. What happened last quarter is irrelevant, but what they say about the quarters going forward, or if they say anything at all, you might find more insight from that than you do the actual hard data.
Well, yeah, we're always watching those earnings calls, especially for tech companies that the president says, Romain, he's willing to be flexible with. He's talking to Tim Cook whenever he's asked about exemptions. It's a suggestion that he's going to take that under consideration. Could we see actual light shed on that? Not from the White House, but on the corporate side.
Possibly. And look, there has been some pretty good reporting from Bloomberg, from the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal about some of the CEOs that have apparently gotten Trump's ear. There was a lot of talk about the retail CEOs going to Trump earlier this week and making it clear that they were going to be hurt. And you're hearing other industries do that as well.
Fascinating. Romain Bostic in
nice,
the flesh.
Guys. Yeah, nice. I think it's the first time I've been here.
Is that true?
Really?
All right.
Yeah.
That
I mean, do I get to keep this? Is this like a souvenir?
Yeah,
like
that's a just a prop, by the like way. You can, every guest gets to take the microphone with them. Maybe we'll see you on the late edition of Balance of Power. The great Romain Bostic in the nation's capital. We've seen it all this week on IMF Week. You never know who's going to show up around here, including Mara Rudman. We want to get into not only the debate over tariffs, the geopolitical debate here in Washington right now as well. When it comes to peace in Ukraine, Steve Witkoff sat down. It was apparently a three-hour meeting this time with Vladimir Putin. I think they had 6 hours the first time around. Almost nobody else was in the room. So it's very difficult to have a sense of where we are in this process. We did hear, though, from President Trump in the Oval yesterday about communications with Russia. Listen.
Putting a lot of pressure. You don't know what pressure I'm putting on Russia. They're dealing. You have no idea what pressure I'm putting on Russia. We're putting a lot of pressure.
Can you maybe tell us that?
We're putting a lot of pressure on Russia, and Russia knows that, and some people that are close to it know, or he wouldn't be talking.
That's where we start our conversation with the aforementioned Mara Rudman. Professor at the University of Virginia's Miller Center, former U.S. diplomat. Mara, I want to start with the meeting today, and Steve Witkoff making a return appearance in Moscow, sitting down with Vladimir Putin behind closed doors, and no one else representing the United States aside from an aide, from what we could see in the video. Here you go. If you're with us on Bloomberg TV or on YouTube, you see him walking into the room, shaking hands with Vladimir Putin, and they sit down at this massive white table without many people around that table. They're getting to know themselves, each other on a personal level here, Mara. What does it mean for the path for peace?
Well, it concerns me greatly that they are having one-on-one or close to one-on-one meetings. Steve Witkoff needs, whether or not he believes that himself, to have the knowledge and experience of those who have had to deal with Vladimir Putin over the decades across Republican and Democratic administrations. And he appears to be operating without that. And the statements he's made publicly are deeply concerning, that he made prior to this meeting about how he viewed Vladimir Putin. And you can be sure that Putin very clearly has Witkoff's number, literally, probably, in terms of what we know about the lack of security and operational security of this administration, but also just in terms of his profile and what it's going to take to essentially get the better of him. So it concerns me deeply.
Well, Bloomberg reported yesterday, Mara, that part of what Witkoff was going to present to Putin today were things that the U.S. would like Russia to agree to in a deal, including accepting Ukraine have its own military and defense industry. But Kurt Volker, who worked on Ukraine negotiations during the first Trump administration, was with us on Balance of Power last night. And he said the suggestion that this is a concession from Russia, which is the invading country here, is a mischaracterization of it, that no such concessions can really exist. And I wonder if you think about that in the same way, or do you think the U.S. is asking Russia to swallow something that it might not be willing to otherwise if it wasn't the Trump administration negotiating?
No, I agree very much with what Kurt Volker said. And I would just point to Kurt as the kind of expert that Steve Witkoff and the administration would benefit from hearing from, listening to, in terms of the depth and breadth of his experience with these actors. And so that is one of the many things that concerns me. I think it is obviously critical for Ukraine to keep its military ability, but the idea that that's a major concession that the United States is proposing to Russia is just another indication, I think, of the imbalance with which the United States is dealing with Russia and Ukraine in trying to resolve this.
Mara, how do you read this back and forth over China right now? President Trump suggesting daily communication between the two sides. He says President Xi has called him. Beijing says none of that is true. What should we take from that?
I think we can take that neither actor who's making these proclamations would be the place I'd go to for truth telling at any point. So it's tough to know or understand what discussions have actually occurred.
You don't find that the administration and the White House is more credit worthy, more truthful than the regime in Beijing?
Sadly, I do not.
I guess that really answers the question about how you read into this. Do you think that there will be a meeting between President Trump and Xi?
I would not be surprised if there was. And I also don't know if there have been conversations between them or not. Clearly, China is very comfortable putting out that there have been no trade negotiations. And President Trump, we know, is sometimes very loose, I can say charitably, with his characterizations of conversations or the content thereof. President Trump also said, I believe yesterday, that he has agreements with 200, he has 200 different trade agreements, and he's 100% certain on that. And that's a somewhat baffling statement to make, given that I believe there are 90 sets of negotiations ongoing or contemplated at this point. So reliability of information is a huge challenge right now on extraordinarily sensitive issues that go to our economic and national security.
Well, I'd like to ask you about another one of those sensitive issues or areas, because the president was just speaking with reporters on Air Force One, Mara, and answered some questions about Iran specifically. He said the Iran situation is coming out very well, that he'd rather have a deal with Iran than the alternative. And he says the deal is very simple. They can't have a nuclear weapon. Are you optimistic that there can be an actual deal inked with Iran? And how close could it look to the original deal from the Obama administration?
Yeah. So President Trump has a history of denigrating agreements and then making new agreements that very much resemble them, see NAFTA and then the subsequent agreement with Canada and Mexico, and the JCPOA agreement between Iran and Europeans and the United States would be another example of that. I will say here, I think there are several avenues that point to potential promising outcomes in terms of these negotiations. And by promising outcomes, I mean getting a better handle again on Iran's nuclear activity and forestalling military action against Iran. I think that's what the Saudis want. That's what other key players in the region with whom President Trump is working closely are looking toward. And I think the question will be, again, the skill of the negotiators on both sides. And here again, I'm concerned about the leading role that Steve Witkoff has.
We've only got a minute left, Mara. 50 heads of state will gather in Rome in the next 24 hours. For the Pope's funeral. President Trump will be there. He and the First Lady will essentially be leaving as soon as it's done, which means likely no meeting with President Zelensky. Is that a missed opportunity?
I think there are several. There are so many opportunities that have been missed by President Trump. I will say that I think it's important in terms of him going to the funeral of the Pope to honor the memory of Pope Francis and to focus on that. So I'm a little concerned about the amount that he has been talking about opportunities for various side meetings, because it's a solemn moment and it's an important moment to honor the memory of a man who really has had a tremendous impact and has a tremendous legacy for the world to respect.
All right, indeed. Mara Rudman, thanks for joining us, professor at the University of Virginia's Miller Center, also former U.S. diplomat.
Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.